Okay, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Cracking on with the final session before lunch. Talking about dry bulk feels a little bit like the Last Supper. I want to show a few slides. Nice presentation from Dalibor there, and I echo effectively most of what he says, but I'd like to just give a few slides of my own just to set the shipbroker's view of the market. Okay, for those of you who have not seen one of these before, you are very privileged. What we're showing there is the dry cargo market over the last 15 years or so. You can see the period before 2003, 2002. I often call it 2002 BC, before China. And we can see just how awful the market is in a recent historic context in this slide. More contemporary data shows us the steady decline of the markets through 2015 to where we are at present. Now, what really sets this apart from what we have seen in previous downturns, particularly the one in 2012, is that was clearly due to oversupply. Demand in 2012 was still there, but we have seen, obviously, in recent months, demand fall off as well. And that is clearly down to what's going on in China in many respects. We can see the reassessment of the Chinese economy away from one that has been historically developed through infrastructure and growth, building ports, railways, factories, apartments, you name it, with construction accounting for almost 60% of Chinese steel consumption. That has been one of the key drivers. You know, the speculators have gone, and the construction market has just taken a little bit of a breather. And what we are seeing is China move towards a more domestic demand, a consumerized and capitalist type society. But if you think that that's going to happen in the next few months, then think again. It took the US nearly 100 years to get through that transition from building the railways across the prairies to the west versus the consumerized market of the 1950s. You know, there's a fair few years and a couple of world wars in between that phase. So don't expect a rapid turn in China. But this is having, obviously, a direct impact onto Chinese steel consumption, which has, in our sort of forecast, reached a peak and is now on a more moderated level. That in turn is obviously impacting Chinese steel production. But as Dalibor touched upon there, that whilst the domestic consumption of steel has been falling in the last couple of years, steel production has on the whole held up quite nicely. Apart from the last 4 or 5 months or so, and what Dalibor mentioned was the putting into the market that excess supply of steel and the dumping accusations that are currently in the headlines today. What has not really helped the dry bulk market is just the way that Australia has responded to the imports required of iron ore by China. What you can see here is a very relatively stable picture of iron ore imports into China from both Brazil and Australia. The long haul voyages from Brazil have been relatively static year on year in the last 3 or 4 years, whereas Australia, through its expansion programs of Rio Tinto, BHP, FMG, have responded to Chinese needs. And of course, that's more of a short haul, certainly in regards to the Brazilian trade. Not necessarily good for the ton mile. Also touched upon was the falling of the Chinese coal imports. What we saw there, really down to a fall off in demand, but also more hydro capacity coming on stream. And overall, total dry bulk trade actually declined in 2015 by 0.3%. Let's call it static, shall we? We're amongst friends. But we are looking, hopefully, for a small increase this year, round about 2 to 2.5%. So nothing spectacular, and certainly not with regards to the growth in the fleet. Talking of the fleet, what we can see here in the blue bars is the month-on-month deliveries versus the scrappings in green below the line. Now, because these are month-by-month or month-on-month additions, then the cumulative effect is quite horrific in terms of how the fleet has grown. So what you can see there is there's only been two very short periods in the last 4 or 5 years where the fleet has actually contracted. It has been systematic growth essentially every month. What this has meant in terms of supply and demand, and this is one of those wonderful supply and demand graphs that was mentioned in the previous presentation. For those who are maybe smart, we actually keep the forecasting bit for our clients, so you can't have that. But what you can see is just the extent of which the supply has grown in more recent years. And whilst the demand has been positive, it's been the last 2 quarters or so that has really seen demand fundamentally for the Cape sector take a breather and has been also static. That has just obviously increased the difference between supply and demand and hence the impact on rates. So what's the industry doing about it? Well, it's trying to scrap its way out, is essentially the first reaction. The good news from a market perspective is we have seen a record month in dry bulk history. January, almost 6 million deadweight gone and so for scrap. We're looking, Braemar's ACM's research forecast for this year is 39 million deadweight. That's our forecast. That would make it a record year. Put it into context, we saw 35.5 million deadweight scrapped in 2012. We saw 30 million deadweight last year. So 39 million will be a significant increase on last year. And, well, my God, the market needs it. But the upside is, of course, that ships are now cheap. And if there's anybody in the audience that's got a lot of cash, then we'll be happy to sell you a ship. And you can see there that in a recent historical context, just how cheap the ships are, but it's even more impressive if you adjust for inflation and put everything in today's market levels. And you can see there that we are seeing Kamsarmaxes, Panamaxes, in essence, the cheapest they have been for 30-odd years. So, with those few thoughts in mind, I'd like now to sort of involve and hand over to our esteemed panel. We have Giovanni Rano from Bungie Group. We have Seb Landerecht from Louis Dreyfus, and Jean-Michel Radisville from CTM. I should say Sea Transportes Maritimes.
Or CTM.
Okay. Why not? Okay, gentlemen, let me just ask you, if I may. We all forecast oversupply in the markets when we saw the extent of the order book developing in 2013, 2014. So we shouldn't be too surprised at the extent of this weak market, but obviously what we have seen is the falling off of demand. How much do you consider that the fall off in demand is to contribute for this pretty awful situation the dry bulk market is in today? Giovanni, if I may start with you.
Is this one?
Well, clearly the demand has been accelerating the pace of late. And I think the two combined factor makes it the market that we have today. As to the forecastability of the demand, I think some of it was possible, some was not. But I think the most important for the shipping industry is how do we see the transition going. Some very pessimistic economists out there say that we're going to basically be flat growing for the next foreseeable future, 5-7 years, on the back of, you know, weakish and problematic economies in the emerging markets in China. You know, India cannot put it back together and therefore will not be able to grow. We are definitely not as pessimistic. Clearly, there is, to our understanding, no solution in 2016, probably no meaningful solution either for the first half of next year. So the job will have to be done on the supply side, really. I'm probably jumping towards the end of the view, but the demand has been a real issue, and unfortunately it has been aggravating a rather burdensome situation already.
Thank you. Seb, Lou Dreyfus, are they seeing the fall in demand on a very significant level?
Not necessarily. I think demand overall has kept a rather historically steady and robust pace. Of course, we can argue that the coal flow to China has been a disaster, but if you put all in all, it's still growing a couple of percentage. You still have very strong bean flow to China. The ags are quite strong. Iron ore, because of the quality that was mentioned earlier, still flowing to China despite the peak steel. What is not consumed in China for steel is exported. So it's not completely catastrophic. The question is really, what's the next really of growth as China is really undergoing this transition? Is there someone to take the baton? Obviously, you have India with a 6-7% growth. The problem is protectionism. The Modi government is encouraging a lot of domestic production, and that has capping the potential for increase. But demand is so diverse when it comes to dry bulk that we should not completely discard the possibility of white elephants or blue unicorn. 10 years ago, we had Katrina, which was obviously a disaster, but that propelled massive cement steel flows into the market. You have Vietnam, that is actually the only country increasing its coal-based power generation from 20 to 50% in the next 10 years, from what I read. So there are relays of growth out there. It's not just for the sake of being contrarian, but there's always strong surprises. And finally, for China, the trend on coal has been down, but the political nature of decision-making in China makes the possibility of an overnight reversal in policies to pick over seaborne versus domestic, it's a likelihood. It's a low likelihood, but the impact would be massive.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And to be honest, you only need to see a dry season to deplete the hydro capacity.
Correct.
And that could change almost overnight. Jean-Michel, what's your thoughts on the contribution that the demand picture is playing on the markets today?
I would say less than supply. Supply has been the real issue. Supply is what I prefer to focus on because it's something we... Everyone hear me? Okay. Supply is what I would prefer to focus on in general because it's something we as ship owners can do something about. We haven't been very good about it in the past, but now we are starting to get it. Scrapping ships, not ordering new ones, canceling new buildings, dare I say it, where possible, and also slow your ships down. I mean, on the demand side, everything besides coal is not that bad. And as my friend says, coal can come back pretty quickly, and it's such a small percentage of the Chinese coal imports, can come back pretty quickly if you think about the percentage of domestic coal versus imported coal, even in a high imported coal environment. So that's pretty much it for me on demand, on supply. I mean, we know what we have to do.
Seb, I'm just going to go back to you just on one point there, because working for a broking company, I'm an eternal optimist. So I'm going to be looking for every good sign here. Do you feel that with India and the coal situation there, as India's coal consumption is due to increase significantly, whilst there is the focus on trying to increase domestic production, do you think the domestic production can keep up with consumption? Do you think there'll be a shortfall that will encourage further imports?
Not an easy one, and I don't know India so well, but from what I read in the news, like all of us, Coal India is producing at a pace of 15% year on year, and they account for 80% of the production. Again, it's a political decision. If you want to support your domestic mining sector, then all incentives will weigh on the balance and make it economic. Then on the coking coal, I think there was yesterday in the news, we're talking about $4 billion investment for the sector in India. Problem is quality of coking coal is more than steam coal, impurity, ashes, and I think here it's not as easy as it looks to replace seaborne.
Okay, thank you. Giovanni, we touched upon there the transition in my presentation to the Chinese economy to one of more consumer-driven demand. Is that going to be a transition we're going to be talking about for many years, and how do you think it will impact on the dry bulk markets?
Not an easy question. I think the transition in China is there to stay. I think the political will of the government is clearly pushing towards that, so this is not a one shot right now in the dark. I really think it, you know, it's a continuous effort that they're going to do. But as Seb was saying, you know, people don't really focus on that, but the demand keeps growing. China keeps growing. Definitely more problematic right now, and you know, probably a lot slower than they actually officially say. But it's still a massive engine of economy. So not to cheer you up, but there's hope for brokers going forward and owners. So definitely, I think, you know, it will be bumpy. It will be probably a couple of years where I think we're paying the price of, you know, over-investing, really, not the transition. So I don't think the transition in itself is the big issue. The pace of growth will clearly be slower. You know, I think we have grown over 20% year on year, I think, Seb, you would say, on the steel complex in China. So that's not repeatable anytime soon. But it keeps on growing, and so are the emerging countries. So right now, everything is clouded because we have a massive overcapacity, and the oversupply, you know, the last 5-6 years, we're paying that price today. So it's kind of shadowed, but I think it's not going to be a big issue in itself.
If I may add, it's Xi Jinping's cabinet has a very strong political view, a vision. They have been taking very hard decisions when it comes to laying off iron ore, coal mining workers. We're talking the scale of 2-3 million over the past few years, which is something that we all, in the past few years, used to consider as an impediment to reforms, and it's actually happening. There is certainly a lot of tensions in China, but in the end, they are tackling the overcapacity. They are going at it. Probably the currency will be the main tool instead of a heavy a la 2008 fiscal stimulus, which is not repeatable. No. It would be completely contradictory with what they want to achieve, but it will bear its fruit. And it's good to see a country like China taking its time and not overreacting on the short term.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, let's move on to the supply side now. John
Michael? Absolutely.
Yeah, let's talk supply. So, mass layups, inevitable, or just go straight to the beaches?
Both is the answer, and the more the merrier at this point. I think it's an owner's responsibility, if he or she has a ship that's over a certain age, to take it right to the beach. I also think he has a responsibility vis-a-vis layups, if rates are too low, to just lay up his ships, because you get to a point where it's just not safe to carry cargo at those rates.
But we are seeing the chatter on the number of cold layups start to increase, particularly in the last month or so. Did you think cold layups is the answer, or is it just idling and inefficient?
I think scrapping is the answer. I think cold layups are a short-term solution and a necessary solution in this rate environment, but no, scrapping's the answer. You got to get supply out of the market forever.
Well, we saw 3 14-year-old Panamaxes got scrapped last month. I guess we've got to see a lot more of that.
Absolutely. We should definitely see a lot more of that, and we owe it to ourselves to do more of that. The other thing I will touch on the supply side is actually slowing down your ships. Low bunker environment, okay, great, you can go faster now, but you're destroying your own market. I mean.
Giovanni, what do you think on the supply response? Scrapping or layup?
The industry needs to scrap. There's no layups. It's short-term medicament that will make the industry feel better for a few months, for maybe for until the end of the year if they go really massive. But I definitely not the solution. And in fact, I think the discipline in scrapping is what owners needs to to establish. And I'm not even sure the economics for layup are really there, because right now the returns, no matter how low they are, on period basis, are a better proposition than the layup. So I think that's definitely not what owners should do.
Okay. All right. Well, I gave you my figure for the year of $39 million for demolition. May I ask the panel for your prediction? Giovanni.
Seb?
No, we don't have a hard number, simply because the dynamics can be very, very erratic. Steel scrap price is a massive component of it, of course. I hear the last done was close to 200. Okay, when you need to scrap, I guess you just go ahead and scrap. But
it's better than negative cash flow, right?
No. capacity, global capacity of scrapping, I think 2012 you mentioned was probably the peak. So how many other ship types need to be scrapped? There is the capacity for sure. So technically you got 10% of the fleet, which is probably more than 1,000 units that are over 20 year old. So that's 50% of that, call it 500 units. It's probably $35 million back of the envelope calc. Is it enough? Probably not, but comes next year. Supply is a slow predicament. I agree that layup is just a Damocles sword that hangs out there ready to fall. But there are the invisible supply, like congestion, speed, yeah. You mentioned, absolutely, speeding up. Accelerated the fleet, there is less congestion, better terminals, all that created a real fleet supply that is massive. So scrap, I think mid-30s million deadweight is possible.
Okay, John Mark, do you have a number in your mind?
No, but I have an answer. More than you think, less than you hope.
I think that's life will stop, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, so we're hoping for a lot of scrapping. We know there will be a lot of scrapping. How is that going to help in terms of the market recovery? What shape is the market recovery going to take? How long do we have to wait? And is it sustainable? Giovanni.
Well, I think the answer will really reside in the audience. I think as I mentioned before, I don't think the demand has, except for unplanned events, catastrophic event perhaps, or a government that would inject a lot of money in the system. I don't think the demand is anytime a solution over the next year or two. So the action on the supply is what's going to dictate how the market's going to behave. We believe that we can have a lot more scrapping than what you're currently figuring. And the function of that scrapping, so well in excess of 38, 40 million, is really a function of what owners will do. If they decide to opt for layups, then we won't have that much scrapping. And then we're going to have probably a little bit more volatility, but we think that the pain will endure, will be longer. So for at least a couple of years, unless they keep vessel in layup for a couple of years, in which case it might be sustainable. But otherwise, layups are not long-term sustainable effects. And to the recovery of the markets, we believe we're going to have a tough 16 and probably somewhat of a tough 17, and somewhere around 17, depending on how disciplined the industry is, we're going to start recovering, which doesn't mean we go to equilibrium positive cash flow and above break-even, but we'll trend towards that, and it could be fast if we help with some of the demand, and the more the better, as you said, so the more discipline, the better, I think, for the industry. That's what we need. So the more we see consolidation and discipline around that, the faster we're going to recover. A couple of years out,
okay,
is what it is.
It's just amazing how our reference points change. We're now talking about OPEX as a recovery. That's the time frame and the position we're in. Mm. Seb, how's this recovery going to look for you?
Well, it starts with the supply. I don't want to reopen the debate, but if you scrapped all the overage fleet, half of the order book gets, which is 1,500 vessels, gets cancelled or delayed or converted into other ship types. Then after a couple of years, you can expect rebalancing. Then it's the eternal question: what is the balance, the equilibrium of price? What's the function of the market economically to guarantee to the risk takers who are the ship owners? So they are the one taking risk, investing. Market must guarantee a certain margin for that. But it's a bit of a chicken and an egg question when you talk to the FFA forward curve and the spot. What drives what? But we have to observe that today the FFA curve is below OPEX until 2018. That does send quite a message, doesn't it? At the same time, I liked very much this morning's remark that if you're optimistic, keep it for yourself. I thought that was brilliant. And yes, it becomes a prisoner's dilemma where if you see a bit of recovery, everybody jumps in, hopefully the market. I don't like the concept of discipline necessarily. We are individual, we take our own rational, even passionate decisions sometimes. But hopefully this market stays low for sufficient amount of time to guarantee a steady recovery to levels where it's not going to be an explosion, but at least there is decent margins for everybody. And I think this market not necessarily has the space for too many operators. I think a certain amount of good relationship between principals and sound cargo-based operators with a strong risk management is necessary to keep this market robust and healthy and avoid
I think that's a sort of message that keeps coming through from what I'm hearing time and time again. The greater the short-term pain, the better the long-term gain. And I think that's what we really need to think about 16. I mean, if we just get the year over with, scrap a lot of ships, and then, John Michael, how is your recovery looking?
Well, first of all, I prefer to have high rates right now, but anyway. the answer is I don't know, but if ship owners take some self-help measures, and self-help is not going to look for more money to pay for new builds or whatever your ongoing business, self-help is scrapping older ships, self-help is not ordering new ones, canceling existing orders where you can, and slowing down your ships, then you can have a recovery sooner than we think. But we all have to stay disciplined. And here's the other thing, as my friend says, let's not get too excited when it does get back. And actually, I think we can get excited, but don't get excited towards new supply. There's enough ships out there, so you can just buy one of those if you really need to.
Right.
Okay, well, we've got a few minutes left before lunch to throw the panel to the questions of the audience. So can I please ask for some questions? Do we have a microphone? Microphone, anyone? There's a gentleman at the end.
Okay, yeah. So thank you very much. Thank you, John Michael, for your views and advice. What happens if you are stuck in this bad market with a fairly young vessel? What is your advice in this situation? Because I think, Rizon does lend itself to your prescription of, you know, if you're over 10, 15 years old, maybe you should pack it in. If you have an asset with a long life ahead of it, caught in a very negative cash flow situation, what would you propose? That's a big part of the market right now. Thanks.
Well, you could do one of two things. You could do, as my friend Giovanni says, you fix it out on period, take the pain. Or if you're a one-chip owner, you put it into a commercial management system with more volume and scale in the market to try and lift up your average while keeping the same flexibility as you would in the spot market.
Thank you.
Seb, Giovanni, anything to add to that question?
No, I think it's just manage your cash burn, and you know, I guess right here, right now, it's about defending whichever strategy works. Obviously, being cost effective, being, you know, good at running your operation is obviously the first thing, and I'm sure everybody's doing that, so it goes without saying. But there is no real magic in extract additional revenues. So make sound projections on what the next couple of years are going to be in terms of revenues, and then cascade your decision from there on. There's unfortunately not a lot more magic.
Maybe just to rebound the question regarding the young fleet, I think there was a big missed opportunity having some of the fleet differentiate itself through the quality on a $60-$70 barrel price. And unfortunately or not, I mean, we haven't had this opportunity to see all design, non-economic, non-eco-design vessel being almost naturally, through the evolution of the of their competitiveness, being left aside. And $30 per barrel kind of
no more echo.
Levels everybody. And but if we go back to 60-70, then yes, some younger tonnage will not be competitive and potentially get kicked out. That's a big if.
Works for me.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got time for one more question.
Hi. Just one question. We're all talking about scrapping and reducing the supply, but do you think that there is enough scrapyard capacity, or even if there is appetite from the scrapyards to take more ships? Because we're talking about, some people say 30, 35, 50 million tons per year, but that's not enough to bring down the supply enough to meet demand. So even if, let's say, all owners of older vessels suddenly decide to scrap their tonnage, do you think that the scrapyard capacity is there? Thanks.
Yes.
Anybody?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, you do?
Yes, I do.
Okay. We scrapped 36 million in 12, see no reason why we couldn't scrap a higher number this year.
The industry in 2012 scrapped about 60 million deadweight. Give or take, and that doesn't actually tell you this is the maximum capacity. You know, we probably could have scrapped more. So, is it doable? Yes, it is. This year, you're probably going to face no competition from tanker, which is a good thing. Back then, you did. Mm-hmm. You do have competition from containers, obviously, to a certain extent, but I think it's a different kind of competition and different type of ships. So I think it's definitely possible to be actually well above 40 million deadweight. And I think the decision really more to the question before is depending on how you want to manage your portfolio, and do you want to, you know, get out and cash in what's left of it and manage your cash burn? You want to lay up or just incur the pain and, you know, in the hope that in 6 months' time it's better? I would discourage that last option, but you know, you need a little bit more time than that, but I think it is definitely possible.
Thanks.
But to your point, 38, 40, 45 or 50 million won't solve the equation either. So we probably need a couple of years of that to, assuming the demand remain at a standstill for the next 2 years, 35, 40 million won't solve the equation. So very good that we see 7 million in 1 month. Hopefully we see 40 or 50 million this year, but it won't be enough. It will be trending towards a rebalancing, but it won't achieve any rebalancing yet.
So, thank you, panel. We have finished on time. The general summary is recovery at the earliest 2017, maybe 2018. But the recovery needs scrapping, cancellations, but we have got a moderately increasing demand picture, although nothing spectacular in demand. So, a difficult 2016 in dry bulk.
Discipline.
That's the word, discipline. Take away that from this session and enjoy your lunch. Thank you very much.